Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this episode 4 of season 6 of The Amazing Race Canada Heroes Edition, in which teams went to Jakarta, Indonesia and had a U-turn-tastic good time. My name is Jessica Lees, and here with me is my own personal American hero who wishes he was Canadian, Dan Heaton. How are you, Dan?
I am doing good. It was a fun episode this week. There was a lot happening, and I'm just really happy about the rise of Team Dan to overthrow the overconfident teams of Team Jess. You know, I can feel it now. It's going to happen.
You know, there are seasons of The Amazing Race where we draft our teams and then we never talk about our teams again. And then there are seasons where it actually makes us feel like we've got some skin in the game.
Yeah, and it's different, too, if it's just like one of those where, oh, the teams we like, there's been seasons where it's like the last five teams we draft just all go in a row. And it's like, well, we're kind of right. That's boring. The reason I bring it up this time is, one, I look at this cast and I'm like, I don't want any of these teams to get eliminated. Like, I saw the two U-turns and I was like, oh, man, I don't want to lose those teams. And those are on Team Jess. So I almost have to be like, well, at least I can root for Team Dan. But it's a weird situation because you only have 10 and now we only had 8 and now 7, where they did a good job with casting because there's not a lot of cannon fodder and they're also nice people and fun. So it's tough to see them go right now.
Yeah, I would say it is extra tough to see Todd and Anna as the third team out. They were the front runners going into this leg, and it was just heartbreaking to see them go out the way they did.
Yeah, it makes me kind of hate the U-turn. And I know it's a double U-turn, and obviously Phil and Martina survived in a cool fashion. And I understand you have to throw wrenches into it. It can't just be detour roadblock or whatever. So I don't hate it in general. It's just when you see a team, like what tends to happen with the first U-turn in a season is, even with a double, it often knocks out a strong team. Because teams are smart. Teams look at it and they go, this is our opportunity, especially teams that have finished near the bottom. This is our chance to go after somebody. But the unfortunate part is you have a team that you could see how much they wanted to be on the show, and not just to win the money, but they just wanted to do it. And that look in their eye when they walked, and they were so close. Oh, my goodness. And not that I wanted Adam and Courtney eliminated. I also like having them. There's no good resolution to any of these teams, especially near the back.
I really have to say that I have never said, regarding the Amazing Race US, I like all of the teams that are left and I don't want anybody to go home and I can't imagine losing anybody. And I think we say this about the Amazing Race Canada every season.
Yeah. And even when there's teams that are a little bit on the blowhardy side, I'd say they're often kind of endearing, where I think, you know, if that team gets eliminated, even like your team giver or something, if that team gets eliminated, there'll be a lot less energy on the show, you know, or something like when Jillian and Emmett at first, you know, but I was like, without Jillian, man, that season's not going to be as fun. So it's like, even the teams that are a little over the top or might kind of fit more into the bucket of other Amazing Race shows, you still look at them and you're like, well, no, they bring something, and everybody brought something, and is all in different ways. That's why it's tricky and it's going to be tough. I mean, we're probably due at some point for another non-elimination, but in general, to watch these teams go out, it's like, whew, this isn't going to be easy, Jess. I don't know if I can take it.
We're just setting ourselves up for like 4 more heartbreaks, one after the other. It's very disheartening. When AJ Mass talks about his different Survivor character types, he's got one called the Ninja. And the Ninja is basically, you list out everybody on the cast, and then there's that one that you can't remember that they're still there. And in every season of US Amazing Race, there's that team. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, there's 6 teams left. And who's the 6th team? Oh, it's those guys. We don't have that here either. Everybody is bringing something to the table. And I love it and I hate it, because every elimination is going to be at least this hard.
Yeah. And we've had teams even on US seasons win the Amazing Race. And I'd be like, wait, who won that season again? Dan, that was 2 months ago. It's like, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I remember. And not to pick on any team in particular, Dana and Matt, but you know, it's tricky because Yeah, I have teams I'm pulling for, but it keeps changing too, because you have a team like Zanab and Monica who seem to really look like they were in over their head and is slowly, especially this week, kind of building upward. I don't think they're going to win the race, but I look at them and I'm like, okay, they're proving to be stronger gamers and racers than I thought. And that's what happens when teams last longer. And even the teams that struggle are so goofy, like Adam and Courtney and Phil Martinez. So it's like you're all over the map, and that makes it fun. So that was kind of hanging over my head as the second half of this week's leg was more like, okay, I see where the top teams are, you know, good for them. But the back half, I was like, oh, goodness, this isn't going to be good. And I kind of sense where it was going just based on kind of how they were putting it together, even when Todd and Anna caught up. And we'll get to that. But you kind of had a feeling, and I had this feeling of dread beyond my excitement of not losing another team.
Yeah, I feel that. It didn't feel like a surprise twist ending. Like it felt like more of a slow march, and you kept hoping they'd pull it out and hoping they'd pull it out. And it just never happened. But let's go back up to the top of the leg. What do you think of Indonesia as an international destination for Amazing Race Canada?
I think it's okay. I mean, obviously, they can do the gorgeous helicopter or stock footage, I don't know, shots of all the islands and everything. And that makes it really cool. And as we saw this week, I mean, they can do a lot of different things. So this is not a situation. Obviously, it's much different. I wouldn't say culture shock. It's not like going to the middle of a downtown city in India or something, but it's definitely a lot different. So I feel like you're putting teams in a place where it's a challenge, as we saw with cab drivers and such, but not such a challenge where teams are just going to fall apart completely.
Yeah. And I thought the connection to Canada might have been a little tenuous there. They're starting to dispense with this notion that everything has to tie back to Canada, which is in a way disappointing. But John points out that it has the second most coastline in the world behind Canada. And I thought, well, that's kind of a sweet way to tie it in. But then they kind of don't do a whole lot with the coastline itself. So that felt like it was a little shoehorned in there.
Yeah, it was basically like, this place is cool, but Canada's even better.
Yeah, let's go to the second best place.
Yeah, this is all right. You know, we got to go somewhere else. We got to make them fly on a long flight. But soon we'll just come right back to Canada and it's even better. It's cool. But yeah, I like this leg overall. I do think they did a lot of different things. So that made it fun, you know, and they put the teams through the ringer a little bit, but it never felt cruel because you have those legs, and we'll see maybe when they go international again, it'll be that way. But this felt a little more like we're going to have them do a lot of different things and it's going to be good TV, but it's not the worst, like super challenging leg we've ever shown a team.
Well, that's true. And that ended up being the case basically from the very first task they had. And I'm going to back up in a minute and talk about the curse of the number one spot. But I want to talk a little bit about this ondle ondle dancing, because this was the most non-tasky non-task. We might as well have been watching Amazing Race US.
Yeah. And actually, I wrote it as task number one. And really, it should be not even considered it, because it's weird, because it said there, it's like, you have to go do the dance. But then I saw teams and I'm like, wait, are they just watching the dance? Or are they doing it? And then you saw some teams kind of dance, but it was really just a way to whichever team gets there first and can get to, you know, can get to the sign up sheet and everything. That was really it. I mean, it's just kind of a nice little cultural thing. So I'd look at it more like whenever they go somewhere and there's a ceremonial dance or ceremonial something that they do that's cultural, not a skill task. And really, after the first teams, we barely saw this.
Yeah. And I mean, good on them for realizing that it wasn't something we had to see, because it didn't affect placement, obviously. Didn't require any skill. And all it was a bunch of Canadians bopping around with a giant mascot with a head, and as opposed to the creepy mascot without the head. Well, you know what I mean. You know, at the end of some game shows, when they give you the little disclaimer, portions of the episode not affecting the outcome have been removed. That's what this was. I think the most important thing, like, we probably would have skipped it entirely had it not been for this sign up, because we learn from Kwame and Dylan that there is a curse when you write your name down first on the sign up sheet.
Man, I love things like this. I want to hear more about weird, random curses that people think or superstitions about the race, because that's good fun for me. It made me laugh quite a bit, especially during the episode when then they immediately got lost and had a bad cab driver. He's like, yep, this is it. We're done. And if they had been eliminated, my goodness, that it's great fun. And I love the fact that, yeah, that they brought it up, and I'm sure teams bring it up constantly, things like this, and it never plays a role. But these guys are an odd team. I mean, it's funny because they're great at tasks, but when they're not doing challenges, they're always kind of doing something goofy. Like they're getting lost or they're just wandering the ports looking for something. I mean, I find them more entertaining when they're actually just kind of trying to navigate the cities, basically.
Well, they're kind of like a more entertaining Gino and Jesse.
Yes, the bar is kind of low, but yeah, the difference, of course, here is I think this cast is a lot stronger in terms of skills. They're like that where they do well on all different types of tasks they're very good at. But then they also have that deer in the headlights look, but with more personality. So good job casting on being, you know, someone in like a boardroom was like, OK, we need a Gino and Jesse, but with a little more zip. Can we do it? We want people that can do the Sports Center task and not look so flat. It's interesting, too. I was looking at kind of who reached the sign up sheet, because we see this a lot on The Amazing Race. But if you look at where everybody started and generally where they finished, it shows this leg was designed pretty well. I know there was the U-turn, but teams that started near the top did not always finish that way. You had teams that, you know, teams are all over the place with where they signed up, which you can see sometimes when they do this, especially on a badly designed leg. There's a sign up sheet. They all get split up and the teams mostly finish exactly like that. That was not the case here, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I was very appreciative of that as well. But it did kind of beg the question, if Kwame and Dylan were so concerned about the curse of the number one spot, if they get to the board first, can they sign up in another spot?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because they could have just signed number two, like waited for the next team, and they would have started at the same time because the top two teams started right there. So Leanne and Marin ended up second. They could, I guess they felt, man, that was probably Kwame brought it up and Dylan's like, really, really, we're just going to sign this up. I think he kind of did see that on TV, but I guess they could have, but they could have just signed up for number eight. Has anyone done that? Just put it at the bottom, like, yeah, we don't want any part of this. But I suspect there are rules to prevent that. I don't know why, but the easy thing to do is just stand there and wait for a team.
Yeah, it might be one of those things they don't really have a rule about, but production is standing right there and they're like, this is ridiculous. Just put your name in the number one spot because we said so.
They just kind of give them that nod like, we will edit you badly. We will. Don't mess with us.
We will Purple Kelly you.
We will make you look like Jonathan Baker. No. I don't know how they can make the two of them do that, but you know, there's got to be a way. But yeah, it was mainly the sign up sheet just seemed to be kind of like, it's a way to split them up so that the teams are not all bunched together. And of course, another reason that the sign up sheet didn't matter is Todd Nana and Dylan and Kwame's inability to basically luck with bad cab drivers, which we saw a lot of that, but then also getting out and then just running around town for a really long period of time.
Yeah. And I'm okay with seeing a bad cab driver. I think I speak for a lot of Amazing Race fans here when I say that I don't love it when we go to a city and a bad cab driver is the sole reason somebody gets eliminated. So I think it's entertaining when it contributes, but I would have been so upset if nothing else had happened, like if they'd done everything else right and then the bad cab driver had screwed them. I think that would have been more upsetting. But as it is, I thought this part was fine. This was something that you have to contend with. We don't get a lot of this navigation stuff in Latter Day Amazing Race, so it's nice to see this skill set being put to the test with people and having people not do so well at it.
Right. And, you know, and most of the time in Canada, you know, because of Chevy, they're driving the various Chevy truck or car or whatnot. So you see a little bit of that, but it's only really when they go to another country where obviously they can't say, OK, we're going to send you to Indonesia and have you drive this giant Chevy Silverado around there. So they have to do it this way. But it's an extra skill. And that's what we want, because you don't want teams that are just good at tasks and being able to just roll through. And we're seeing it with Dylan and Kwame, who still finish in the middle, But probably if it was just like do a detour, do a roadblock, like we've seen in some legs, like the 1.5 hour legs or something, they'd be in the top three every week.
That's true. They're very good at challenges and not really good at anything other than challenges.
Yes. So now that they have passed that, they, of course, get to task number 1A, which is, or 1B, I guess it would be the proper
1B.
Thing. 1B. Take a load off, which involved carrying these prickly durians, prickly fruit, to the ship. And it's nice. Something to do. I didn't get the impression beyond one team, the first team bringing them there and having the judge say no, that most of the time this just kind of seemed like something to do that was different.
This is a missed opportunity, Dan. Do you know anything about durians?
No, I did see John eat one, though, and he was not a fan. That's all I know. But I didn't know much beforehand, so I'm curious.
Well, this is what I know about durians. You don't see them in the U.S. very much, do you? The reason for that is, and I can get them, like you can go to Chinatown and you can find them. They are very much an acquired taste. The thing about the durian is when you cut it open, it is, shall we say, pungent. It has a smell that's sort of like sweaty socks on top of really smelly cheese, on top of like rotting fruit a little bit. It's a very hard smell to describe, but it's not one like you do not want to open one of these in your own kitchen. But what I'm told is once you get past the smell and you eat the fruit, it's quite a delicious fruit. It's got a nice texture and a nice flavor once you can get that smell. Like if you can get past that, it's very delicious, but it's not a very common thing in the U.S. I had heard that they are banned, but I don't think that's the case because I think I may have even eaten some in Chinatown one time. I was with a friend at dim sum. He speaks Chinese, so he was just ordering for everybody. And when they came by with the carts, he would say, yeah, we'll take that, that, that. And I ate something and it was a dumpling with a piece of fruit in the middle. And the fruit was kind of silky. It had a really nice, I don't even really know how to describe it. And I was like, huh, this is really good. What is this? And so he eats one. He says, this might be a durian. I'm not sure. So I may have eaten durian. Don't really know, but that's a durian. So the real missed opportunity here is like, sure, they're spiky. They're kind of funny looking and they're big and you have to haul them. But why didn't anybody other than John have to eat?
Yeah, that it seems like even if they wanted them, it should have been like one of those multi-step tasks. OK, haul a bunch of durian. Then when you're done with that, sit down and eat one. And just to see their reactions, like I looked up while you were talking, I pulled up the Wikipedia page because it was linked. And it says here, the durian has been described variously as rotten onions, turpentine, and raw sewage. So, I mean, how people's looks on their faces when they are opening something up or eating it and it smells like possibly raw sewage. I mean, that's TV gold. What are they doing?
Well, I can think of two reasons they might not have done this. The first reason is simply that they had an epic eating task last week and they're not inclined to do them back to back. That could just be the simple fact of we made you eat pie last week and we're not going to make you eat a large amount of something the second time. The other thing is, I don't think it's putting Canada's best foot forward to have people sit down to eat a delicacy and cut it open and have everybody gagging at how horrible it is when it's not like something is just a piece of fruit. It kind of makes it seem like you're afraid of trying new things, or there's like a little element of xenophobia on that. So that could be it. But I do think it would have been a much better task if they'd had to haul all the fruit and then cut one open and eat like one small piece of it.
Right. This would not be something where you would want to have a volume eating test. But you make a good point, because one thing that I think the show in general, all U.S., Canada, everything, has done a better job than early seasons is you don't really have as many moments when it may just part of its editing. I'm sure people sometimes have strong reactions, but you don't have these kind of ugly moments as often where people are like, yeah, like this is something that's very important to this country and people eat it. Everybody's like, oh, you don't see as much of that. And especially on Canada, because I feel like in general, like we even saw with the U-turn reactions, people generally don't get as angry or as kind of this is torture on this show. But still, they probably try. Part of that is probably designed with how they do these.
Yeah. And I mean, we have seen like they have had to eat some kind of wacky things when they were in China, but it was also kind of they didn't eat something that's a staple food. And it was something that very clearly, like, even your average Chinese person might have looked at and said, that's a little weird. But the durian is a little different. So I think a lot of people eat durians over there, and you don't want to just have like this perfectly normal piece of fruit and people gagging and throwing up, because potentially that could have happened.
Yeah. And there's only, I guess there's only so much throwing up and gagging we want to see on The Amazing Race Canada. So from there, I mean, I don't think there's anything else we need to talk about with this. Teams beyond Todd and Anna and Dylan and Kwame getting lost and having bad cab drivers, which did obviously hurt Todd and Anna. But really, the next step to me was the move towards the U-turn board.
Yeah, well, there's one other thing I would have pointed out here. I wanted to give a shout out to Adam and Courtney because they did something very smart on this task. They brought gloves. And those of you out there who are thinking about applying for any iteration of The Amazing Race and you're thinking about what's on your packing list, something that comes up just about every season that could be useful, just like throw a pair of gloves in there, because you don't know what you're going to be handling. It might be hot. It might be spiky. It might chafe your hands. Gloves will help you get through a lot of manual labor tasks. And kudos to them for bringing gloves along.
Yeah, it's funny. I look at my notes and I have Courtney uses a pair of gloves. Helps! ! Which is an odd thing to write. This is how I write things, I guess. But yeah, I kind of blitzed right over that. So that's good you brought that up. See, we are here to help future racers. This is part of what we do here. So, hey, we're trying to give tips here, Jess. I appreciate that, especially with your rules, that you are passing the wisdom of our many seasons competing on The Amazing Race on to other teams.
Well, I can't verify that anybody listened to any of my Amazing Race coverage before getting cast for The Amazing Race at any point in time. But I do know that it has happened roughly half a dozen times with people on Survivor. So I'm just throwing out the public service. And I know a few people have gotten cast on Amazing Race and then gone back and listened to our podcast before they went. That's happened at least twice that I know of, and probably way more than that. So these are pearls of wisdom,
yeah,
things we have observed. Again, we have not been on the show ourselves, but we aggregate a lot of information and we've watched probably more seasons than you. So take our advice with the grain of salt that comes with people that have not been on the show, but understand that we are coming from a place of knowledge.
Yes, and I was not being sarcastic about that at all.
Well, just in case anybody thought you were.
I mean, maybe like 1%, only really ripping myself for giving lots of tips to people. But, you know, speaking of tips, did people, so we have the next step. Well, let's start with it. The U-turn board, I have something written by when I discovered where the U-turn board is. It was not a curse word or anything. It was just UGH exclamation point.
Really? Because I had a curse word by mine.
Why would I say that given what happened with the U-turn here? What was the problem here?
Because the frickin' U-turn is before the frickin' detour, making it not a U-turn. U-turns come after detours, not before. Stop doing this Amazing Race, for the love of God.
Yes, and I understand why they do it. Part of the goal is to do it early in the episode. So there's drama, like they can actually catch up. However, there are ways to do this differently. Let's put the detour before. First thing, they do a really hard detour, then they do the U-turn, then they do two more tasks. There's other ways around this. The thing about it is it just, it's rewarding people for not doing that much. This isn't the worst example. There are examples sometimes where they basically get off the plane, take a cab, and get to the U-turn board. They did have more to do here, which I appreciate. But still, you're in a situation where teams didn't have to do, I mean, all they really did was a dance and navigated, which is hard. And that was the big, I think, X factor, obviously. And then the durians, which I don't think changed the placement too much. So the main deal, that had a huge impact on the race. And they had a chance to come back, Todd and Anna did. But it's still, I know this has become up in many podcasts before, so I don't want to belabor it, but it's just not a good look. I always appreciated like that Canada, at least, was still putting it after the detour. And this season, they did not.
This is very disheartening. Disheartening is kind of my word of the night. I'm not happy with this, but I guess to Amazing Race Canada's credit, you had to do something before and you have enough to do after so that if you get U-turned, it's not an automatic death sentence. And I think that is my chief gripe with the Amazing Race US U-turn placement where people, it's basically like whoever gets off the plane first gets to do the U-turn. And then there's not really enough going on that any team that gets U-turned is going to be able to make that up. So this was okay. Like sandwich it smack in the middle of everything. I guess that's good. I'd rather have it be after the detour so that you are properly turning around as you would with a real U-turn. But if we're just down to semantics, I guess that's not a hill I'm willing to die on.
Right. Yeah. And because, like I mentioned, like Dylan Kwame were the first to sign up, but got lost. So they were not the first to get to the board. It was Leanne and Mar, but they were also on that first transportation and they did not U-turn. And Adam and Courtney did not U-turn. But first we had the use from Nancy and Melissa, who were very excited to use the U-turn on Phil and Martina. Was that a good choice by the JL rules for who you should U-turn?
Well, by one metric, I would say yes, because you should always U-turn a team that you do not expect to see again so that you don't have to suffer any of the repercussions of your heinous, dastardly, villainous act. But by another metric, there are a lot of teams on the board that are behind them. They had their pick of the litter. They weren't really in danger. There wasn't really a compelling reason for them to use it in the first place. So I think the most correct move for them at this instance would be not to use it at all. But if they are going to use it, they should look at the whole field and see like who would be most advantageous to be out of here right now. And Martina and Phil, they are surprisingly strong, but if you're looking at it objectively, they're probably the weakest team out there on the board. So all you're doing is basically hastening their demise, maybe by one leg or maybe by no legs. Maybe they were going out this week anyway. I would not have looked at them as my first choice.
Yeah, and I think this was a case where especially Nancy was really excited, possibly because they were so far behind last week. So that might have played a role, but was really excited to use the U-turn, especially because it was blind. Now, even when it's blind, I have a feeling teams talk to each other that they will discover who U-turned which teams. I don't expect it will. They'll never understand. But it was interesting because they kind of both were like, I guess Martina and Phil, you know, they're not that strong. And so it made sense to a point. But yeah, again, it was fine. I don't think it was like the worst choice they could have made. But the Zeynep and Monica's made more sense to me. One, because they've been near the back the whole time. But to pick Todd and Anna, who have been 1-2-3 or 1-3-1-2. They even said they're a strong team and want to get them out. I can understand that, especially from a team that's been struggling. That one makes more sense to me.
Well, the other thing about Todd and Anna in this spot is not only are they a strong team, they're a strong team who's already stumbled once. And if you give them something else to stumble on, that probably kicks them out. Like, what have Martina and Phil done this leg? They've done their task. They're fine. They're not already operating at a handicap. So this is their first stumble. And I think the key thing is Todd and Anna is a better play because they are already playing catch up. They've already screwed up once. This is going to screw them even further. So I really liked this play by Zeynep and Monica. I think they're proving to be a really self-aware team. They understand they're not the strongest and they understand how to employ strategy to make up for any deficiencies in their game.
Yeah, I mean, even just the way they approached it, I didn't get a sense it would. I mean, there was no vindictiveness, obviously, or anything. But they also, I think, said, we're pretty sure that Todd and Anna are behind us. That's important. You know, I mean, I know Nancy and Melissa were third, so their odds are pretty good that whichever team they picked, they would be ahead of because a lot of those teams were there. But even arriving in fourth, I think one of the reasons, like you said, Todd and Anna at the time, I think were in last place. So, and that little bit, I mean, they ended up losing by just a few minutes. That's different than if possibly, you know, they'd done something different. So again, I'm just going to restate what you said in a really cool way, but do this every week. It's just what I do. But I just like to rave about them too, because, you know, it's good to see a team that had a non-elimination that saved them in leg two that still had kind of been in near the back, but I don't think they're going to win, but I can see them kind of starting to figure out, all right, we just gotta kind of move through it. A lot of it is just kind of, you hit a task, you just kind of do it. And they're okay. They did their best leg this week, and not just because of the U-turn, just their finish. And good to see. I like it. Not a, go Team Dan.
Well, let's take a minute to talk about some of the what ifs here, because I think we did get a listener question about this. So it's not totally out of left field here. But one thing that I was kind of turning over in my head, and I want to see your thoughts on this. Why were Dylan and Kwame never on the board here as potential U-turnees?
Yeah, I actually think they are. I mean, nothing against Todd and Anna, but if you really think about it, they are the type of team that is very dangerous when you get near the end of the season or near the end, because a lot of times you have a lot of physical tests when you get near the end where they really try and test these teams. And we've seen it where you have, you know, Dino and Jesse, but also Steph and Kristen, or even almost, you know, Megan and Natalie. Teams that kind of might have a bad leg here and there around this point seem to really turn it up. So the more I think about it, I think it would have been a great move. The trick is, I mean, they were about where Todd and Anna is, but who's to say those guys are not to stereotype, but are great at sewing. So they might, you turning them might have been enough. I don't know. So it intrigues me to think about. I wonder if teams for sure knew where they were.
That's what I thought.
That's the big question.
Yeah. Because the last time you knew where everybody was the sign-up sheet. And lo and behold, their names are number one on that sign-up sheet, as we discussed at great length. So I think people must have assumed that they had already been and gone to the Durian task.
Yeah, and that's the difference, because Todd and Anna were on the last one of the sign-up sheet. So I think that was probably one of the main reasons that they got U-turned, because they were already in the back. Where, yeah, and so teams probably, because we never saw anyone mention them, and even they, Dylan and Kwame were like, oh, hey, we didn't get U-turned. It was almost like they expected it. So I think that has to be it, because these are not dumb teams. They're smart teams. And while these guys might not be finishing first every week, just give them time. I mean, if they are able to kind of survive this kind of stretch of episodes, you get down to like the final four and those guys are still there. I don't think teams want to see them, especially if you're teams that aren't like the strongest physical teams. And really, no one's as strong physically as those guys overall. And even Adam seems to get stuck doing the wrong roadblocks and such. So those guys physically are the toughest team out there. So it's too bad. It was a missed opportunity. They might have survived, and that would have knocked out Adam and Courtney probably. So that's kind of the what if. But I don't know. It would have been close. It would have been really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think we can talk about this a little bit more when we get to questions, but I do think it's down to this is a team that excels at challenges, but they haven't been great performance wise. Like, third is the best they did, and that was this week. And up until then, they hadn't finished better than fifth. So you might look at them and say, okay, they're physically very strong, but maybe that's all there is. And so perversely, maybe they're not thought of as a threat.
Right. And that could be totally true, because you do see kind of the case where teams are seeing them kind of wandering around, not sure what they're doing at times and such. Like, if Todd and Anna had survived, they would look at those guys like, those are the guys that we followed all over the port. Why would we think those guys are strong? You know, so it's, I think you're making a good point, but, and they haven't won any legs, and it is a big deal to teams. Oh, they won a leg. Like, Todd and Anna win a leg. It's like, oh my. And almost won again last week. I mean, it was inches. So that makes a difference. And it's interesting too. Now, looking quickly at who's still on the board, you have a team now in Leanne and Mar that have won two legs, and granted, they were not an option to be U-turned, because again, similar to Dylan and Kwame, first sign-up sheet, teams probably didn't think, but they seem now like the team, not the strongest like muscles, but the team that looks like they may be a target if this comes up again.
Yeah, that's who I'd U-turn if there was another U-turn next week, for sure.
Yeah, because they don't seem to have an obvious weakness, especially with this show liking to do things like dance tasks and some things that require a lot of skill, not brute strength, but skill. Those two are just, they're rolling. They were really good this week.
Agreed. So let's talk about the detour then. We got Ular and we got Kabaya. And Ular involves giving a snake a bath and then having to sit with a leech attached to your body for 5 minutes, because there's your tie-in to Stand By Me. And then in Kabaya, the far, by far less popular option, you had to sew two panels onto a jacket. And boy, I stand corrected, because the beginning of the season, I said, when Martina made that crack about, I can't wait for the sewing task, I'm like, when is there ever a sewing task? There's like one every 10 seasons. This is a ridiculous thing to say. And oh, mea culpa, it was not a ridiculous thing to say, because not only was there a sewing task, Martina rocked it, and I stand correct.
Yeah, and you know the editors, now that I, obviously now seeing this task, you're like, oh, they were just setting it up. That's what they were doing. I just thought it was a funny moment. And I'm trying to think, what was the other thing that she says she's good at? Because we need to track that. I was trying to remember, she had two things, and I can't remember offhand her other skill. And again, it was something very similar and sedentary, but I don't think she's going to be lucky enough to get both. But yeah, if I was looking at it, I'd look at these two tasks and say, well, you have one that might be a little icky, but there's no real skill involved there in washing a snake or sitting with a leech. Why even mess with that other task? And really, if it wasn't for the U-turn, no one would have done the sewing, basically, except for, oh wait, I think Phil and Martina would have still done it, because I think that's where they went first. But everyone else would have skipped it.
That's true. It's one of those tasks where it's going to take everybody the same amount of time to get through it. Whereas the sewing task, if you know what you're doing, you can probably get through that a little bit faster. And if you don't know what you're doing, you could be there for a while. So it's kind of the trade-off. So I guess my advice to everybody in that situation is always to go for the one that's going to take the finite amount of time. And it seemed to work out for everybody that didn't get U-turned.
Yeah. And yeah, because you look at it, and the leech thing, I think, was like, I mean, part of it was because it was entertaining and people, and some leeches wouldn't go on and such. But they know, OK, it's going to take 30 minutes to wash the snake. It's going to take 10 minutes with five plus whatever for the leech. OK, sewing. That could, for me, it takes 6 hours. But, you know, if I would ever get out of that. So, yeah, it's an easy thing. Now, what did you think about the fact that the snakes, John made a big deal about this. The snakes, not all the same size. They could be different. Could that have made a huge difference in this task?
Well, it's weird that you get to the animal task and the size of the animal you get is a total crapshoot for the second week in a row. That's very strange to me. And it looked like Dylan and Kwame lost that snake lottery by quite a bit.
Yeah, I like how the snake just like wrapped itself around Dylan's leg. This is like, they get this giant yellow snake. And I forget who was with them at the time, who looked and was like, oh my goodness, that is much worse than the one that we have. I think it was Todd, it might have been Todd and Anna, but on their first one, I forget. But that was funny. That it's almost like they did that just so a few teams would open the basket and be like, oh my God. And then have some sort of moment. And the teams did not disappoint, which is what I hope for them.
Yeah, it seemed like once you got past the ick factor, this was not a hard task. But it was very startling, I think, to have to hold this giant snake. And we've seen this as recently as U.S. Amazing Race 28. There was quite a bit of snake handling. And I think memorably, Tyler and Corey said they felt like they were in a Britney Spears video.
Yeah. So it's a good one to use. And the leeches, of course, which seem pretty straightforward, but I never thought it would be such a big deal. To the leech just didn't really want to go on some arms. So that added a little extra skill to it. I don't know. Is that what you call that?
I think that was more luck of the draw. Like, you either get a hungry leech or you don't. But I thought that was like their whole reason for being, was to latch onto your skin and suck your blood. I was led to believe growing up from my parents and from the movies of my youth that if you go into any kind of like murky pond, you're going to come out with 50 leeches attached to your body and then you will die. And this turns out to be pretty much not the case, apparently.
The leech is like, no, we're good. We're fine. Why are you making us do this? I was just hanging out. I'm all set. Yeah, you. They were not like the leeches out of like the African Queen or something. Or I don't know if that's the right example, but.
Well, we've already cited the one example that I have.
I think that was it. Now I'm going to get corrected. I remember seeing that as a kid, but I did like Monica, you know, getting all zen and be like, I am the leech. Like Courtney of Taylor and Courtney was like losing her mind, which I found entertaining. But then you have Monica's and I'm like, oh, whatever. It's a leech. We've seen more. They're on the sea. This is nothing. Like you said, the leeches are everywhere. They've probably dealt with this 100 times, right? So those two were this was their task to power through the leech task. That's their skill.
I don't know. I feel like some of these racers sitting still for 5 minutes is probably in their wheelhouse.
It's like, I can do that. I mean, yes, it does. And I'm not giving anyone trouble who freaked out because, you know, snakes and leeches, not something I'm really dealing with on a regular basis. So I can understand that. But really, that was put in place to be fun TV because, again, sewing, not as fun. I mean, a little bit, you know, a little goofy, but not something I want to see 9 teams or 8 teams do where the snakes and leeches, you know, it was cool. Partially because, again, we still had another task. So we didn't spend 20 minutes just watching every single person. There were no snake animation things to say, you know, like the snake can say, yeah, I'm not clean yet or something like we've seen in the past, you know, which in hindsight, I think would have been fun, but we don't see a lot of that. So really, I think this was, you know, most of it didn't take that much longer. You can see kind of where Phil and Martina, because of Martina's sewing, gained a slight edge in the battle for the kind of the two teams that had been U-turned. They were like, it said they were tied. So I think this is the first of two examples where Phil and Martina not only survived the U-turn, but also killed 2 tasks in a row to do it. And I don't, you know, so that's about all about the sewing. I mean, I think Anna did very good and had, you know, said she had experience with it. So no one was bad at it, but Martina was even better. And that slight edge only was exacerbated when we got to Phil, the dance master that I was not aware of a little further down the road.
Yeah. And yet again, I am chastened by my dismissal of the notion that being good at sewing would get you ahead in the Amazing Race.
It was important. If either one, like let's say she was bad at that, they might have gotten eliminated. Or if, you know, Anna was even better or whatever, you know, whatever the example is, that makes a difference. And this was a case of a detour where you did not, both partners did not have to do it, which sometimes they do things like that, where they'll say each of you have to sew a shirt or something. And that would have made it even more interesting because I have no idea if Todd is a great sewer or Phil, but I don't think they would have done as well as their partners.
Probably true. So that's about all we have for the U-turn or slash detour. And I think then we got to move on to who thinks they are handy.
Yes. And when I hear that phrase, I always think of dancing. That's what I think of. You know, it's a clever way to subvert anyone because you know what's going to happen. People are going to think, I'm going to build a motorcycle or something, which they've done in other seasons, or I'm going to, you know, do something like that. So they're like, okay, here we go. It's going to be Adam's going to do it. And then Taylor's going to do it or what, you know, whatnot. And of course, in Adam's case, that was a very poor choice.
Yeah. But on the other hand, context is important. Putting aside whatever the roadblock asks you, look around at where you are and you might get a better idea that maybe they're trying to pull the old switcheroo on you. I'm not saying that you need to have psychic powers to know that you're going to have to do a complicated hand dance, but you're standing outside a theater and many, many Amazing Race tasks have taken place in a theater. And 90% of those tasks have involved some measure of dancing. And sure, you could have thought, oh, I'm going to go in and build a set or something. But most of the time you're going to a theater, you're going to dance, you're going to perform. So if you are opening a clue outside a theater and you have to decide in the moment who's going to do the task inside the theater, maybe think about sending in your best performer.
Yeah. And we really saw it where teams that did the right choice. I mean, there were some huge shifts in the standings coming from this. Most notably, of course, you know, Adam and Courtney going from 2 down to nearly being eliminated. But that is a good point because, yeah, you're probably not going to build a motorcycle in a theater and or something. So, and for me, if I was doing the race, anything that came to a theater that like that, I'm not going to do that because it involves probably something like this. So, but it's easy in hindsight to look either way on this. But also the clues for the roadblocks by this point in the history of all Amazing Race seasons rarely ever give anything away. So you're right. Most of it has to do with where you are and what you're looking at.
Yeah. And half the time you can even see somebody doing the roadblock behind you when you open that clue. So anybody that's getting fooled by a roadblock clue at this point is just not paying attention.
Yeah. So I did enjoy this. I mean, I think the show, you know, the Amazing Race Canada really likes dance tasks. We've now had two in four legs that I can remember. And that's okay, because I do think they're often fun, especially when people do well who you might not expect, or the opposite. And yeah, for me, the big example, Leanne and Mar, of course, killed it and got in first place. Or I mean, obviously not both of them. It was Leanne. But Phil was the real star here. I mean, we had some solid performers across the board. The impression I got is even the way he did looked at, like we've talked about, kind of have this look like, oh, I'm a dancer, I can do this. And they, for them to get U-turned and finish six right in the pack is awesome. And to credit too, there was a lot of people that did, like I mentioned, Taylor did very well. They finished fifth, but they were right there. So it's not always how you expect. And also more power to Todd for finishing and getting them close. There was a lot of people, no one did so terrible, which made it more interesting because there was some suspense to it.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know like how much of that was editing. They tend to tell you like it's their first try or their fifth try or their 32nd try or what have you. But, you know, they did fudge it enough to make it seem like everybody was there for kind of a relatively equal amount of time. So it was not an impossible task for somebody. And that's always the worst, is when someone just gets stuck on a task while everybody else is good at it. I feel like I have these sympathetic pangs of the problem is me. I'm terrible at it. And if I ever went on The Amazing Race, I couldn't live that down if I turned out to be the one person who couldn't do a task.
Right. And I mean, we saw it last week to a point with Akash, where he just could not do the knot. Well, that was a weird phrase. But basically, they weren't in first when they got there, but they were in the middle and they got eliminated. And we almost saw it this week with Adam. And I don't know what you're referring to about the editing. I mean, are you saying that things don't happen exactly like we see? You make a good point, because, and I fall for it a lot, where you see it and it's kind of like, oh, are they going to get it? Are they not? And yes, most of the time it kind of hits the beats you expect, but they do a good job on this show. I mean, they telegraph it, but not to a point where it's like, I'm hitting my head on the desk while I'm watching it.
So I think that pretty much takes us through to the end of the episode, Dan. Are we ready to tackle some questions?
Yes. And I wanted to mention one more thing, which was Martina's wonderful chant. Just Jakarta, Jakarta. Those two, I was so sad when I got U-turned because I thought they were going to get eliminated. And was so happy they survived. They just never cease to amaze me. But on that note, yes, let's dive in to questions. And I think we've covered a lot of these, but I think there's definitely a few good ones here.
Oh, here's a really good one. I'm glad somebody brought this up. The Melissa Bot says, should they have canceled the U-turn due to the quote unquote Heroes Edition twist? U-turning someone is villainous. It's not heroic at all.
Yeah, and she actually added like a little gif of like a devil in her tweet. I saw, which we can't really, you know, it's interesting because I did wonder how far they would really push the Heroes theme. And we've seen a little of it here and there, but not in a sense where it's that different from a normal season. I mean, most of what the Heroes was just who they cast and what they kind of, you know, everyone they cast has a good story. So it's not that it was pigeonholed, but I've appreciated that it's mostly been undersold. But to answer the question, no. Part of me is like, yeah, that'd be cool. And then Marty's like, yeah, maybe what do you replace it with something else? Like, I guess there are ways to add, if they came up with something unique, like a new type of task or pulled something from, I did wonder, speaking of that, if they were going to resurrect the like salvage pass for this season because of the Heroes Edition theme. There was a team in Australia, you know, they could finish first and you could either get a slight advantage or save a team. I don't think we're going to see it because I think that would have been at the beginning. But I wondered about something like that to really push with Heroes. So maybe not that, but they could have come up with some other task instead. But again, a face-off would also kind of be that way because you're competing. So it would have to be something that was not directly, I don't know, I guess that's a little better because you're not just stopping someone. But I don't know, Jess, I need some help. What could they do? Or is it even worth having this discussion?
I would say it's not worth having this discussion because I want to quote the great Jonathan Penner here. There's no villain in Monopoly. And by that, he means if you are given a set of rules and a set of paradigms to work with in within a game, if you're following those rules, that's not particularly villainous. So I don't know that I 100% agree with him on that front. But if you're given a U-turn and you use that U-turn, and you're not just doing it to like settle a personal vendetta, and there's a strategic element to it, use the U-turn. It's there for a reason. They want you to use it. It adds conflict. It gives you an up. It's not heroic to it's not heroic to shun the U-turn.
Yeah, and that is true. And neither team seemed to have any. I really like it when teams are U-turned and don't get mad at the other teams, which is nice. We don't see a lot of anger about U-turns in Canada. We've had some seasons in the US especially where it's like the whole theme of the season, like you U-turned us on episode 4 and we're still mad or something.
How dare you? I'm a senior citizen.
Now, I hate that so much. So this is good. So as long as teams take it in the right way, no one seemed, I mean, teams were upset, but you saw both teams put their head down and really fight. You didn't see anybody freak out. It was cool. So I say it's heroic. The way they responded to the U-turns makes them heroes. That's what I say to them.
I say everyone's a hero.
Especially podcasters. All right. So here's an interesting question. This is from Stephanie. And she on Twitter says, I am loving these powerful female teams on Amazing Race Canada. And I'm going to adjust her question. She says, of the two, who do you think has the greatest potential? No. Of the three who finished in the top 4 this week, which of these three has the greatest potential?
I think it's just a testament to the strong casting this season that we have three great all-female teams. And I wouldn't have said it about Zainab and Monica before this week, but they really showed their personalities and they showed their strategic acumen and their tenacity and moved all the way up to 4th place. And like you said, Dan, I don't think they're contenders to win necessarily, but they proved that they have a lot more going on than we might have initially thought. So I would say they have potential, but I'm sticking with my horse here. I think Leanne and Mar, they were the team that struck me as the strongest all-female team going into this race, and nothing I've seen so far has given me any reason to doubt that.
No, I don't agree. I mean, no, that is not what I meant to say at all. I do agree. I was going to say I don't disagree, which is the stupid double negative. But no, to me, they are the front runners and they've been the front runners since the beginning. It doesn't mean for sure they're going to win. I see cracks with Nancy and Melissa. Even Nancy's really sort of obsession with finishing first here, there's something about it. I think, I don't know, they're a strong team. Nancy and Melissa could totally be there in the final three. But if both teams are there, I'm not going to pick them. And they're on Team Dan. But a lot of it just still seems like they're a good team, but they don't know each other. Melissa seems a little more uncertain about certain things, which she's a strong competitor and very good. Part of that is they don't really know each other, like I said. So of the two, and it's like splitting hairs here, but I think you're right, Jess. Right now, they seem like the more all-around complete team. And even though they only won by a very short distance this week and in leg one, they just seemed a little more complete.
Yeah, I'll go with that. We did get some related questions about Nancy and Melissa, because I think people are kind of tracking them. Like, if the Amazing Race Canada Heroes Edition could be said to have a villain, I would say that Nancy and Melissa are the strongest contenders to be those villains. And it's like you said, Dan, they could go all the way and then fall short at the end. That seems like a very likely arc for them. But we got a question. Dustin Storshook on Facebook said, how long before Nancy and Melissa have it out? Nancy is so intense and Melissa not so much. I predict a blowout possibly. What do you guys think?
You don't know. You know, it's interesting. I might be more inclined to think that, but they didn't have it last week. And last week they struggled in, you know, with the pies and with even at the end with the knots, and they still kind of hung in there. So while they probably have a higher potential for that to happen, really, than any other team left on this season, that's still a pretty low potential. Now, Melissa Budd also not, I mean, if I tried, she could just dominate the show with all these questions. But she also mentioned how excited, and I would say just Nancy, how excited she was about the anonymous. She said screwing them over is what Melissa Budd said. But she asked if it was kind of sociopathic. I wouldn't go that far. I just think that Nancy really wants to do well. And both of them do. But I have a feeling she's both of them have competed their whole life. Nancy just seems like she wants to win. I mean, that's what we're seeing, and is very good at this and takes it seriously. So it always does come up when you have all the people that are so heroic. You have someone who's nice, but a little more competitive, possibly. It might come off that way, but they're going to be interesting to watch because they got right back into second and have been up there all except for the 1 week. And I'm curious to see where they go. I think the range of possibilities is very large for them.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to tell what happens to them. Like, they could go out in a blaze of glory next week, or they could end up making it all the way through to the end of the season. And we're just going to have to wait and find out.
Yes. So I wanted to call out a sort of a funny comment that we got, which kind of relates back to what we talked about last week. It's from JD McGuire on Facebook, where he said, "Who planned this route? British BC, Yukon, BC, Indonesia makes sense. But then to immediately go to Ontario next week? That seems crazy. I hope that the episode starts with them all landing in Vancouver and having to find the ferry terminal again to drive themselves to Ontario, followed by a 4-day driving montage." And it's something interesting. You know, is it possible they could actually fly into Vancouver again? Not like and get out of the airport, but wouldn't that be the most likely transfer point from Vancouver then on to Ontario? Could they basically have gone to that airport or that city in every episode so far by next week?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think there are probably direct flights to Toronto, but it's very, very likely that they end up going through Vancouver yet again.
5 episodes where in some way Vancouver's been involved. This is impressive. We gotta track this some more and see if it happens, I guess.
And I think to his point about the route, it's interesting the way that they do the Amazing Race Canada course, because they don't circumnavigate the globe the same way that you would on Amazing Race US. And so they have a little bit less of a perfect circle and more of like a strange and wild polygon. And I don't mind it. I think it's adds an air of unpredictability because you could literally go anywhere, any leg.
Yeah. And I actually thought, I was a little surprised that they didn't spend another leg somewhere kind of near Indonesia. Like, they've done some in the past where they do 2 in a row, not in the same country, but like adjacent or somewhat nearby areas. So it's interesting that they're flying all the way back. And like you said, it makes it less predictable because it's got to be rough on the teams too, where you fly, you know, with you're crossing the date line, and then you're crossing it back the other way and the time change and everything. If teams next week seem a little annoyed, we will understand why, I think, because that's not easy to do in a short period of time.
Well, that's what the old school race fans call the killer fatigue.
Yes, which usually doesn't appear this early, but we'll see. Usually the second time teams go international in the Amazing Race Canada is when you really see that start to kick in. And that's usually, I don't know, leg 7 or 8 or something like that. So, you know, we're going to see, you know, Martina just melt down in some. No, I don't think that'll happen. But I was just trying to think of someone who's a little more over the top. So we have any other questions we want to get to here?
Well, the great Scott St. Pierre asked us on Twitter, does Phil ever hug the eliminated team at the mat? John Monty is the coolest.
I think he has before. Not regularly. I don't get the impression in general that Phil is as sad, but we have seen teams where you can tell that Phil is a big fan of the team. Like, I don't know if he hugged them, but like he really like Mark and Bopper or something. There are just certain teams where Phil is just like, I really like this team. And you can see that he's kind of sad about it. But the second part of it is it's different than John. I mean, John is the coolest, of course. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that, but you do get the sense when John has to eliminate teams, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, that he doesn't like it. I mean, he has to do it, but he has that look on his face. Like when he says, I'm sorry that you're eliminated, you really, I think he feels it a little more than some of the other hosts.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like Alan Wu always seems disappointed in their performance, and Grant Bowler is like, all right, another one bites the dust. But yeah, John, you can tell he can hang. And I love that about him as well.
All right. So are we ready to talk about the kiss count and the new developments here?
Oh, I'm so excited about this, Dan. I cannot wait to talk about this because this is really this. I'm so excited for this.
So I'm going to let you do the honors because it was actually I wasn't even mentioned in this, but it's because, of course, I am winning the kiss count bet at this point, I think. So did we get an update on were there any kisses this week?
There were no kisses this week. And I think that's what kind of set it off, because I think that's the genesis of this comment. And just to get you all updated, thanks to Karen Eisenberg again, who is keeping track of this for us. And she reports that the kiss count holds steady at 13 and the babe count is now at 25. So that's where we're at with this. And so we got a tweet just to set this up. I received a tweet. It was even before I had seen the episode, so I didn't even really know what was going on. But I got a tweet from Adam and Courtney who said, looks like we're going to have to kiss more next leg if Haymaker Hattie is going to win the kiss count bet. You should put money on it and proceeds go to a charity of your choice. And I thought, huh, that is a great idea. We should make it interesting. And so then I thought, well, charity of our choice. I'm sure Dan has his favorite charities. I have my favorite charities, but most of my favorite charities pretty U.S. centric. And if I'm really going to be a Canadian hero here, I got to find a Canadian charity. So I asked the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. I said, guys, if we're going to give to Canadian charities, can you name some for us? Because Dan and I can each choose one and the loser will just give a dollar amount. And I think we've agreed now that we will give $1 for every kiss accumulated all season. The losing person on our podcast will give $1 for every kiss accumulated throughout the course of the season to the Canadian charity of their choice. So that's to set it up. That's where we're at. And then as we were having this discussion, somebody said, but wait, why do you and Dan get to do all the charitable giving? We want to be involved as well. Like, we want to be able to give to charity too. So then I thought about it some more and I talked to our overlord, Rob, and I said, I'd like to do a little bit of a contest here. So we can ask our listeners to give to Canadian charities and then maybe we can make it a little sweeter for them as well. So Rob agreed to that. And so we are proud to announce, drum roll please, we are announcing the Amazing Race Canada Reality TV Rehap-Ups Kiss Count Contest. And the way this is going to work, guys, Dan and I have our own bet going. So we'll honor that. The loser of a bet, they're going to give a dollar for every kiss to the Canadian charity of their choice. And the rest of you, here's what you're going to do. We're going to collect a list of Canadian charities. By the time this podcast drops, this will be up at robhasawebsite.com/kisscount. You can find a list of suggested charities or you can go off the map and find your own. We ask that it be Canadian. We'd like you to give a minimum of $10 Canadian to the charity. And when you get your receipt, send a screenshot of that receipt to jess@robhaswebsite.com. And we will be entering you in a drawing to win a Rob Has a Podcast buff. So that is our great news. And we're so excited about this. We really want to thank Adam and Courtney for kind of lighting the fire under us and getting us going on this. And we're really excited to be supporting Canadian causes.
Yeah, it's great. I was excited. And it's one of those things, too, when they brought it up, I was like, well, that's smart. Why didn't we think of this? We're smart people. But it's fun to get suggestions, especially from the superstars from Team Dan that they are, that my favorite team, the number one pick now. So it's cool. It's exciting. I mean, I'll be interested to see where they finish in terms of this count, but I like the fact that it's beyond that because sure, we can make a little bet and we can do that, but a way to get others involved and to kind of fit with the theme of the season, which, you know, a lot of these cast members are amazing. Well, yeah, of course they are. That's the name of the show. It's just a fun thing to add and just to support a good cause and have some fun doing it.
Personally, I think it's really exciting that even Americans can be Canadian heroes.
Yes, that is. It's a plus for us here. We're having some fun right now. So it's good. And I'm looking forward to see what happens. And it's really good having, you know, a listener like Karen who's doing our work for us so that we can just do all the fun things and just make it a good time. And so this is going to add some entertainment. Now, the key is Adam and Courtney in the past, do not get eliminated. We need you to be on the show. We want this going to the end of the season. If you lose, we've got to have this going. So I'm hoping that by this suggestion that we're in store for good things.
Yeah, I hope not only do you make it all the way, I hope you are sucking face 24/7.
Never. This week was perfect. It's exactly how it's going to go.
I don't want to give $13 to a Canadian charity. If that's all we get, if that's all the kissing we're getting for the whole season, I'm going to have to double it. Like, I'm just going to feel bad. Even if it is $13 US, which is worth a little bit more. But yeah, we'll figure out something. We'll see where we're at the end of the end. You know, we need to watch all the way through, because even if they get eliminated next week, maybe they'll kiss on the final mat.
That is true. We're going to be like watching the last few minutes like it's like the Zapruder film or something. Like, wait, they're in the corner. Just for winding it back and forth. But no, and I say that more just wanting to win, not because I'm a cheapskate or anything and don't want to give money to charity. It was more like, you know, well, it's just, yeah, keep going. Just get to about 30 something, or, you know, even above, as long as we are mathematically to the case, because, you know, it's not about the money. It's just about wanting to feel like I am victorious. So that's a little side part. But the most important thing is giving to a good cause and helping people out.
So I'm very excited about this, and I'm still mulling over what my charity would be, but we've compiled a big list. And when you go to www.robhasawebsite.com/kisscount, the list of suggested causes will be there. And again, you can choose your own, as long as it's Canadian and as long as it's helping people, that's good with us. So stay tuned for updates on the contest, and don't forget to make your contribution to enter to win a Rob Has a Podcast buff. And this is open to pretty much anywhere we can mail said buff.
Right. And it's fun. It's exciting. So this, I love this show, and finding other ways to enjoy it is always cool.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So with all that, I hope you guys have enjoyed this installment of our little podcast here. And we love your feedback. So feel free to leave comments on the episode thread at robhasawebsite.com, or you can tweet at us anytime. Thoughts about the show, thoughts about our show. We love to hear it. You could reach me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And thanks again, everybody, for the feedback. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. We love the interactions this season. I think it's some of the best ever. And I want to give one more shout out to all of you. You'll notice we mentioned the Rob Has a Podcast Patrons Facebook group. And this is an area where fans can kind of interact with each other over all the various reality shows in the Rob Has a Podcast firmament. And it's really a lot of fun. Those of you that support us on our Patreon page can find some really cool perks associated. Like, if you give high enough, you don't even have to worry about the kiss count contest. You just get a buff. So there's that. And it's also the place where, if you are not Canadian and you're looking for ways to watch the Amazing Race Canada, you can find links in the Patreon group. That's one of the more reliable ways to find that. So we highly encourage supporting us in that fashion. However you choose to support us, just listening is support enough, and we appreciate that too. So thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.